Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
It's tech and all his friends. It's tech if tech were forged in the fiery chasms of Mount Doom. It's tech, the end of tech as we know it. You say tech, I say tech, let's call the whole thing off. It's tech for tech's sake. It's long-running boy band tech that. It's enough of this introduction. It's the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, casually foghorning its way into the cold, unforgiving cliffs of Tech Island to bring you 2 score minutes of unassuming goss of what's hot in the world of things powered by electricity. Keeping it strictly business, this week we have Lewis Painter, senior staff writer at Tech Advisor and Macworld UK.
Hello.
Keeping it strictly ballroom, it's Tamlin McGee, online editor at Tech World.
Hello.
And please keep your hands exactly where I can see them at all times. It's Dom Preston, staff writer at Tech Advisor and Macworld UK.
Hey.
Things are about to get pretty special up in here as we tackle the big ish of Apple's mysterious upcoming event, WikiLeaks farting on everyone's week again, and people moaning about the Nintendo Switch. Strap in and take notes, please. I'll be asking questions. We talk long and often about Apple on the UK Tech Weekly, and listeners may feel that we give undue attention to tech's biggest, shiniest, and probably richest company. But a bit like rubbernecking a terrible accident, it's actually quite hard to pull your eyes away, and indeed sometimes your wallet. Lewis Painter is a self-confessed living and breathing but positive example of an eye-lifer, and like millions around the world, will wait with debit card in hand for Apple's next big product announcement. So Lewis, why are we talking about this today? And what are we expecting from Mr. Cook and Co?
That is the most accurate description of me I've ever heard, I think.
You can have that.
That's my Twitter bio sorted now. Okay, so the rumour is that there's going to be a Apple event at some point in March.
Usually is, isn't there?
Yeah, there has been for the past 2 years. They started off when they announced the Apple Watch back in 2015 and the MacBook, which you have.
I do.
Think, yeah. Yep. And then last year they introduced the iPad Pro 9.7 inch and the iPhone SE as well. That's so right, we're expecting interesting things from this event if it does happen this year.
What do you think they will announce and why are they using March to do it?
Okay, see, usually we assume that it's focused on laptops because that's what it used to be. But more recently, so in 2016, rather than focusing on the Mac line, Apple focused on the iPad and the iPhone, and then slowly, quietly updated the MacBook and the MacBook Air a few weeks later. So we expect kind of incremental upgrades for the MacBook and possibly the MacBook Air, but that might be dead now because, you know, last year it had an incremental upgrade. It hasn't really had much attention paid to it for at least a few years now. And it just kind of seems that the MacBook and the MacBook Pro are the two that Apple are really pushing at the moment in terms of design and usability.
Yeah, I suppose they're trying to move slowly over to USB-C as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, we're using a MacBook Air to record this podcast and the office just got a couple of new Macs for the editorial team to share and they're both MacBook Airs. It's weird how the computer that everyone still insists on using is the one that Apple is actually trying to kill off.
See, it's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, so we had the iPhone SE event. It was on 21st of March last year. Yep. So we're thinking around the same time, maybe a week later.
See, this is the question because it was on the 21st last year, but it was on the 9th in 2015. So there's quite a bit of variation there. But the common theme is that they're both on Mondays. So we expect to be on a Monday.
So that'll be a nice way for us to start the week.
But there has been one recent, I know, yeah. The most recent rumor suggests they might actually be pushed back to early April. Because this is due to stock levels on the online store for the iPad Pro 12.9. When you in the US, if you go on there and you try to book one to pick up in store, there's no stock in store until the 4th of April.
That's about 3 weeks, maybe about 3.5 weeks away. So that's quite unusual. So, I mean, we love to skate around the internet trying to find rumors.
I mean, it ties in with the fact that Apple said that their new campus, Apple Park, is due to open in April 2017 as well. So it's speculated that they've pushed it back an extra couple of weeks so that they can have the grand reveal
in the campus. In the Steve Jobs Theater.
Yeah,
right? Steve Jobs Theater.
So, cool. We will keep our ears to the ground. And also, the other interesting angle here is that if it were around the 30th of March or around that time, it was Samsung had their Galaxy S8 event in New York and London on the
29th. Day before. So about to steal its thunder.
Yeah. Apple is really going to try and steal Samsung there, isn't it? Because they really, Samsung, we pretty much decided, have delayed that event to not only make sure their phone is as good as it can be after the Note 7, but also to get past all the hubbub of MWC.
Yeah, separate yourself from the LG G6 and everything else that was announced there.
Yep.
And, you know, it seemed like a very good idea until, you know, if this does come true and it is at the following day, it will be slightly awkward for Samsung.
Yeah, it's going to be a busy week.
Oh, I know. It's going to be great. As well as the iPads and the Macs and stuff like that. Some people are speculating there might be a second generation iPhone SE, but I'm not so sure about that.
No.
Because when the iPhone SE was released last year, it was kind of a generation back in terms of its internals. So it had the 6S, but it had iPhone 6 internals.
Okay.
And it didn't really have the cheap price point to make consumers be like, okay, well, the internals might not be as good, but it's £200, so whatever. It was still like, I think it was like between £350 and £400, which is not that far off, you know, iPhone.
That's still pretty premium pricing.
Yeah, for like something that's essentially mid-range and it's got a 4-inch screen. You know, there was, it was just, in my opinion, it was a little bit of an underwhelming product. You know, they can bring it back this year, give it a design similar to the iPhone 6, curved instead of looking like an iPhone 5, which is extremely dated now.
Yeah.
You know, upgrading the front panel, giving it a better camera, giving it the 3D touch tech.
True.
You know, give it all those kind of things. Make it a proper Apple product. And I think it has the potential to do well, because a lot of people do want the small iPhone, even if I don't.
A few people in the office have one, either on contract or because they've been like a review unit. To me, it kind of makes sense, and I don't think they will change it. I don't see them giving it the body of the iPhone 6, because that is so similar to the iPhone 7, which they won't update.
Yeah.
So I just think that that line will be too confusing, but I do agree with you that...
I mean, I think it's pretty confusing at the moment anyway.
Yeah.
Trying to explain all this to people that aren't in the Apple bubble.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, well, why are they doing that then?
And just before we sort of ask Tamlin what he thinks about all these consumer things that we get bogged down in, do we all agree that the format of the... basically Steve Jobs pioneered when he sort of, there were presentations for the iPod, but they can look like kind of charmingly small when you actually look, you can look at the launch of the iPod in 2001, and it basically looks like it's in a school lecture theater, and then bring it towards 2007 with the iPhone and everything, and then these bombastic events that they put on, and obviously that then dates back to when he released the Mac in the 80s and things. So is it a tired format? Why do we still manage to get ourselves so excited about it, and indeed the money-spending public?
I mean, I think it's something that Apple's cultivated over the years. You know, I'm happy to be proved wrong, but I don't really remember any other company generating as much hype for a press conference as Apple did. You know, and it's only in recent years that other companies like Google and everybody else has really jumped on this trend of live streaming their events, showing it to the public at the same time as it does to the press. And I think that's, I think that's something that Apple's really pushed forward. And I mean, I don't know why we get so excited about it. It's just technology at the end of the day. But hey, this is what we're here for.
You know, an old colleague of mine at a different magazine described Apple fans as a cargo cult. I have to say, listening to you three, I would probably agree with that.
I mean, I'd probably agree with that as well.
This is the thing, because when we see other companies do it, Google does it slightly better than the one I was thinking of, which is Microsoft. And we kind of take the mick out of these events.
Oh, yeah.
But then we still try and take the mick out of it in our own special British way with Apple, but then on the days when we're reporting it, as soon as it starts, we just actually love it. And it's really hard not to get carried away with it. I mean,
Apple's marketing is just absolutely insane. You know, those product videos, I'm pretty sure there's some kind of hypnosis in those videos, because especially with the iPhone 7, I didn't watch the event live. I made a point of not watching the event live. I was busy that day, and I was like, I'm not going to watch the video, but I won't buy an iPhone 7. I ended up watching the video and I ended up buying an iPhone 7 Plus.
I have an iPhone 7 as well. So.
But I mean, I think it is a case of kind of preaching to the choir. I mean, I've never been a big Apple guy. I never had an iPhone. Last Apple product I bought was probably an iPod Classic about 10 years ago.
Wow.
And, you know, I've just never bothered to follow any of the press conferences. You know, I'll pay attention professionally, but it doesn't interest me in any particular way. I'd never care to watch it live. And I think if you're not already part of the Apple ecosystem, it's...
Yeah.
It is just another blip of, oh yeah, there's a new iPhone. Cool, fine.
Absolutely. I don't think I'll ever be won over to their products. I had an iPad 2 ages ago, whenever that was, and it was nice, but you know, it wasn't like life-changing to me or anything. But maybe it's just kind of my take on consumer technology in general rather than anything about Apple specifically.
Is there anything comparable in the B2B landscape whipping up so much excitement about, well, what is a press conference? But obviously Apple's cleverly branded as like an event that they have, which is obviously like a monumental word that they stick on the front.
No, I think ultimately us in B2B are just fundamentally more cynical than you guys.
Yeah, it's the thing. We're talking about our fake cynicism. We like to pretend we're not really excited, but we're going to have to write about it, and we probably will. It probably does help being relatively excited. So we think that they will shy away from the Mac. Are we thinking about anything iPad-shaped as well? Because last time we thought maybe there'd be an iPad Air 3, turned out to be a smaller 9.7-inch iPad Pro. Will they do a iPad mini-sized Pro, which would actually quite heavily contradict their statement when they released the huge one in the first place?
Yeah, I think they're starting to cannibalize their iPad line somewhat. It's their current lineup's really confusing, and it's hard to understand who's the the main target for what. Because you've got the 12.9-inch iPad Pro, you've got the 9.7-inch iPad Pro, you've got the iPad Air 2, which is also 9.7 inches, and the iPad Mini 4, which is 6.9.
Yeah. 7.9.
7.9, that's the one. Yeah.
It's all very confusing.
So it's all very confusing, but according to the latest rumors, we're going to get a new iPad Pro 12.9. We're going to get not a new iPad Pro 9.7, but a standard iPad Pro 9.7, which will somehow be different to the Pro one that was released last year, but no one's quite sure how. And in addition to that, there's also speculation they're going to release a brand new 10.5-inch iPad just to confuse things a little bit more.
So, I mean, if you do a 10.5, is it just going to be something that's basically bezel-less but the same size as another one?
I mean, that is possible, yeah. That would be a very nice way to look at the iPad, but, you know,
I'm getting frustrated just talking about it because it seems like this is a company that should be a victim of its own success, but it just never is it?
Why did they do so well?
we talked on the pod a couple of weeks ago about how potentially, this was actually before some of the revelations about Uber recently, but that might be a company that's successful now and may not be around as long as we once assumed. Is Apple, do we think, really a company that is going to be there forever?
I mean, I saw a report back in, I think it was like 2012, 2013, that Apple had hit its peak at that point, and they predicted that the biggest player in the mobile market in 2017 would be Microsoft with its Windows platform and Nokia. So that wasn't a very accurate report.
Yeah, no.
I mean, people do speculate that Apple's kind of hit its peak. You know, iPad sales are down, not everyone's buying a new iPad every year, but iPhone sales are strong. Mac, I think they need to work on that a little bit this year. I think if they take it back, because I think they're concentrating a lot on the iPhone, not enough on the Mac side. If they kind of balance things out, because their Mac user base is huge.
Yeah.
You know, you can't neglect a user base that big. And with Microsoft pushing into the creative space recently.
Yeah, they've got more rivals there now.
Yeah, Apple really needs to kind of work on that this year, I think.
I don't want to sound tight, but they're just so expensive.
Yeah.
No, not tight at all. I mean, we've all probably bought an Apple product at some point, but it does sting.
It hurts so much, especially, you know, post-Brexit with the price rises across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned the iPhone SE. That went up at least 50 quid after, what we say is Brexit, what Apple won't comment on. But, I mean, like, iPads that have been up for ages have gone up in price. And I think the Mac Pro, the weird cylindrical
high-end
Mac, that went up from, I think, it's $3,000 now, basically. Yeah. And it was definitely gone up by £400 or £500, which is just nuts for a product that's now 3 years old. So we will report on whatever Apple brings up and when that is on the pod, no doubt. So as is tradition, let's see what you think, everyone. Lewis, is it iPad, therefore I am, or all hail the tech-based sham?
iPad, therefore I am.
Thought so. What about you, Tamlin?
We'll go for the tech-based sham.
And
I'm with the sham as well.
Sham, damn it. Okay, cool. So it's the sham for the first round. Let's see what WikiLeaks brings up next. So, sitting tight in London's Ecuadorian embassy, one Julian Assange makes frequent global headlines with WikiLeaks, the 11-year-old organisation famous for leaking confidential and often incriminating evidence of government surveillance, violence and just general mishap. This week, it announced what it has dubbed Vault 7, which sounds at once like a sci-fi film and a terrible nu metal band. We've got Tamlin McGee here, who's the online editor of Techworld, to explain briefly what it is and what it all means.
In short, there was a massive leak of files that WikiLeaks published that appear to have come from a CIA contractor. The CIA obviously isn't commenting.
Yeah.
But basically, it describes a bunch of vulnerabilities and exploits in pretty much any platform you can think of, and some more off-color things like ways to hack smart TVs and turn them into listening devices and things like that. But it's an absolutely huge, huge leak. Alleged leak. Edward Snowden, the whistleblower who sort of leaked the NSA information, has described it as a big deal and that it seems genuine. But the difference here is, as opposed to the NSA and GCHQ leaks, which were more about blanket surveillance, these seem to be targeted methods.
Yeah.
So ways to compromise individual devices. So if you're sort of known to the CIA and they want to monitor you, they'll be able to, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Like WikiLeaks is claiming this is more actual raw material than the Snowden files.
Mm-hmm.
And also, it's called Vault 7, but then they're releasing it in stages, right? Mm-hmm. So at the moment, you can sort of dodgily torrent the first part, which is called Year Zero.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down that from the press release they put out, Year Zero introduces the scope and direction of the CIA's global covert hacking program, its malware arsenal, and dozens of what they call zero-day weaponized exploits against a wide range of US and European company products. And then I thought, interestingly, they actually go on to say, include Apple's iPhone, Google's Android, Microsoft's Windows, and even Samsung TVs, which are turned into covert microphones.
Mm-hmm, that's right. I think one of the concerns at the moment is that, as you say, WikiLeaks hasn't released at all, but if it has access to the code as well, that could easily fall into the wrong hands.
Yep.
And because of the sheer volume of malicious attacks described, like if that ended up in the wild, it would be an absolute disaster for cybersecurity, basically.
Yeah.
But the smart TV thing was interesting. It was something called Weeping Angel, and I think if I remember correctly, it was developed by either GCHQ, the NSA, or maybe both. But it's not like they could compromise smart TVs remotely. They'd have to physically go into your house, plug a USB stick into the TV, and then access it remotely. So if you're getting to the point where inside your home, you're probably not need
to think
place
about
anyway.
Sort of general home security rather than cyber, right?
Maybe leaving the country would be a good start.
The BBC reported that the USB method of getting into those Samsung tellies was also co-written by MI5 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean? Why would WikiLeaks? I mean, we could start many sentences with that. But why would WikiLeaks release something at this point with such a massive scope that also implicates so many countries? What are they trying to achieve here?
It implicates those companies as well, because there's details about vendors selling exploits to the CIA,
mm-hmm.
and then the CIA hoarding them. I think one of the biggest dangers from it is that the CIA is sitting on these vulnerabilities, which pretty much affects everyone, you know. So it's learning about ways to access devices and then deliberately keeping it secret from companies in order to exploit them. That means there's an enormous amount of exploits out there that we had no idea about.
Yeah.
You know.
And then, so what? How do you think the media has reacted to this? Because sometimes when you get allegations of sort of these, for want of a better word, conspiracy, but then also what a company will claim is like hard evidence,
mm-hmm.
Why the media has, I think, a duty to report it in the best way. But I've seen a few articles, and I won't name any publications, but the broadsheet online, which is they wrote quite what I thought was a irresponsible story, saying that people's WhatsApp could be compromised, that people can spy on you, and it was a little bit kind of warrymongering.
Right. I think that's a misunderstanding of encryption and cryptography
yes.
in general.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
You know, if your endpoint, so your phone, has been compromised already, everything on it is compromised. That's pretty much goes without saying. If someone mugged you and had your phone and your PIN code, then they'd have everything on your device.
Exactly.
It's actually good news for WhatsApp and Signal, because the papers show that the CIA hasn't been able to break that encryption, and it's one of the few things that they haven't got access to. So, that story, I'm pretty sure another one you're referring to, was pretty much incorrect all
yes.
around.
Yes, it was.
There are a few other interesting things in the papers. One thing that's probably worth noting is that the CIA is particularly interested in compromising the Internet of Things. That's significant because private vendors, really big corporations like IBM and Intel and so on, are really banking on this play of connecting absolutely everything in the world. So it's interesting to think that, you know, if our cities are completely connected and there's sensors on pretty much every street corner and inside our home as well. It's kind of weaving surveillance into the absolute fabric of everything. Yep. So that's fun to think about.
Obviously, we're talking about it, and then it forces companies who are mentioned in the report, such as Apple, to reply. For example, Apple's statement was quite lengthy, which is unusual for Apple sometimes, but they do tend to take the matter quite seriously, as they have historically. They said, "The technology built in today's iPhone represents the best data security available to consumers, and we're constantly working to keep it that way." It then uses it as a platform to say that nearly 80% of users run the latest version of iOS, suggesting the security patches on those things are good enough to get around some a threat like this. But the companies can say that, and we can't really dispute that they're claiming that. But then obviously, what will the general public really think about these sort of things? I mean,
To be honest, I think Apple's been quite good, at least publicly, in terms of security. Like, you remember the story recently where the FBI was demanding encryption keys and...
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah.
Apple pretty much refused.
Just said no.
And I think it emerged that the FBI broke it anyway, but from Apple's PR, that's quite good, I suppose.
Yeah.
I think cybersecurity is really important, but I think there is a tendency to get a little bit too paranoid about these things. If you're concerned about it, you should probably use Signal and WhatsApp and sort of run basic security considerations. But you know, if the CIA or the NSA or GCHQ wants to spy on you,
they will.
You know, they'll find a way. They have the resources to do it. You know.
Yeah.
I think running around paranoid in your day to day life about it is pretty useless.
Yeah. No. I totally agree. I know that brings me to the point. Do we all feel like this argument kind of goes round and round in circles slightly? Like you suggested, intelligence agencies that have such power and often governmental backing, is it kind of futile for us to worry about it as individuals? Obviously, we need to have a strong opinion on it, and most of us here would agree that it is wrong. Mm-hmm. But in the media and personally, I don't know, I just think this argument, I'm like, oh, well, I really disagree with that. And then you kind of think, well, like you suggest, Hamlin, if someone really wants to read my email, they probably can.
It's a political question, isn't that, rather than a technology question? I mean, I think that you shouldn't make it easier for them, and you should probably use encrypted tools, but also, you know, you're not going to have much luck going up against the state if it wants to come after you.
Yep.
So what next for Mr. Assange up in his Ecuadorian embassy? What the hell does he do? does he ever leave? I know Pamela Anderson is meant to visit.
He looks
sometimes
a lot like Noel Edmonds now.
He does. He is. Maybe you've got a deal or no deal thing coming up. But like, what would he do? He's been in there for like 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm. He's been veering further and further to the right and been putting out really dodgy statements every now and again. Actually, that brings me to Trump's position on WikiLeaks. I think late last year, he said, "I love WikiLeaks." It turns out that's kind of come back to haunt him. Surprise, surprise.
Oh, dear.
Sean Spicer and Trump have both said that they're concerned about it, and the FBI and the CIA are launching a federal investigation into it.
Again, though, it's a people in very powerful positions who we distrust and don't really take seriously, and we can't do anything about.
Exactly.
So does this stir up internationally that countries like the US and the UK can technologically listen in? Are we really that worried that our telly's listening to us? Lewis, are you worried about all your tech listening in?
Nah. I mean, you know, you see these reports every now and again, like people covering their webcams with tape and stuff like that. I mean, I did have, I'm pretty sure someone was watching me through my home security camera once, my smart camera.
How do you know?
Because I saw that there's an LED above it that only comes on when somebody's accessed it, the live stream. And I'm the only one that can access the live stream, but yet the light was still on. So I unplugged it straight away, face down, got rid of that, never bothered with that again. But in terms of day-to-day, I'm a bit like...
There's a search you can do online using a tool called Shodan, and it displays pretty much every open Internet of Things connection, and there are so many unsecured home cameras on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can literally go online and just access home cameras if you want to.
I don't think I want to.
Me neither. Anyway,
that's pretty nutty. For IoT, is that something that... The difficulty with that is that there's so many different... devices, you can't standardize security for these things.
Well, it's new as well. There's efforts to start doing that and industry standards and so on, but we saw with something called the Mirai botnet recently, it was a very simple piece of code that started infecting IoT devices that didn't have security baked into them and then self-replicated. It just found more using publicly available open data like Shodan. It just found DVRs, home security cameras, set-top boxes, things like that, and it's been able to launch the most powerful DDoS attacks in history,
And that was it just did it itself.
It can be directed.
Oh right, I thought you meant AI had just decided.
Now I'm worried.
It's getting very Terminator now.
But it just goes to show that security isn't a real consideration in most of these IoT things at the moment.
Because the reason I thought you said that, there's this documentary called Lo and Behold, which is the latest Werner Herzog documentary. It's it's a bit of a sprawling mess, to be honest. There's one point that really stood out for me, and they were interviewing a guy from a software security company, or maybe network security, if there's a difference. Sorry, B2B. and he said words to the effect of, not only can I not tell you that AI won't evolve in such a way that it will become sentient, but I can't actually tell you that it hasn't already happened because it might be so clever that it wouldn't tell us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Which is Skynet, obviously.
I talked to a futurologist about this once, and we're going a bit off topic, but
it's okay.
And it sounded really out there, but he was saying he used to be a BT engineer in the 90s, and another prominent futurologist also worked with him. And he said, way back then, BT was scared that the switches in the telephone network were already sentient and they had no way of knowing. This was in the 90s. Now, if you think about the sprawling data centers out there, or even connected consoles in our homes, there's every possibility, according to these guys, although it sounds completely ludicrous, that, there could be a network of PlayStation 4s or Xbox Ones that kind of understands itself and realizes it exists.
Wow.
But a bit off topic.
That's all right. That's okay. We've come to the end of that section, so that's a harrowing place to leave it. Thank you very much. If we go around the room, starting with you, Lewis, is it big up WikiLeaks or shut up conspiracy freaks?
I'm going big up WikiLeaks.
Yeah, you think it's important. Okay, Tamlin?
Big up WikiLeaks.
Dom?
Yeah, big up WikiLeaks.
Okay, Julian, keep doing what you're doing. We will... sorry,
maybe not that.
Maybe with a on the end. We'll come back and talk about something slightly lighter in the next section with the Nintendo Switch. We record this pod 6 days after the official release of Nintendo's latest console, the Switch, and a few of us have had hours to test out whether or not it's worth the hype, and indeed upwards of £300. As seems to plague Nintendo, what appears at first an innovative, refreshing hardware design is coming in for some brutal online criticism, with reports of faulty units and scratched screens. So, Don Preston, how have you found the Switch, first of all, from a purely gameplay point of view?
Mixed, I guess, in the sense that I've had absolutely phenomenal experience playing the new Zelda game, Breath of the Wild. I've had that for about a week and a half, and I've sunk 40, 50 hours into it so far.
At least. That's your job, it's allowed.
Sorry. Yeah, no joke. That's sort of my job. And that's, I'm about halfway through the game, so it's going to be hovering around 100 hours by the time I'm done. And I mean, I'm the sort of guy, I don't normally get into big games like that. I prefer smaller sort of 4 or 5 hour indie experiences. I tend to get feel like I don't have the time to commit to huge games like that.
Yeah.
So it's really rare for me actually to sink that kind of gameplay into a game. And Zelda has really grabbed me, and it is, I'm struggling to imagine, I know we're early in the year, but I'm struggling to imagine a game coming out that is better than that for me this year.
You gave it a rare Tech Advisor 5-star, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely glowing review. I really tried to find bad things to say, and the worst thing I could think of was, there's too much to do. There's just too much game. So much game.
Yeah, there can't really be a criticism. Are you a Zelda fan anyway?
Yeah, so I am a long-running fan of the series, which I tried to sort of bear in mind and temper things with. And I was really, so that's part of why I was trying to find bad things. I was thinking, you know, I don't want to come at this from a biased place. I want to bear in mind I'm a fan. Not everyone will be. But part of what I think makes this game so special is that if you are a fan, you'll love it because it's actually very different to what's come before in the series. It's a big reinvention. They've kept some of the important bits, but also brought in a lot of new material and really tweaked the format in a way that they haven't in years. And the Zelda games have been very, they've still been very good, but they've been a bit stale for a while.
Yeah.
It's felt a bit like Nintendo's been in a rut with them, just almost copy and paste, kind of the same kind of thing, just tweaks to the world, tweaks to some of the weapons, but basically the same game each time. This feels like a big change.
So this isn't just Ocarina of Time with a bigger world and better graphics.
It's very, very different. And that's part of the reason I think, I know Lewis has tried it and doesn't totally agree.
I'm about to ask him.
But yeah. But I think it could be a big draw for people who don't love the franchise and haven't played that many Zelda games before.
Because that's what I was about to say. For me, I have played Zelda and I do get Zelda games.
Yep.
I understand why they're fun and I have completed a few. But I still think that a lot of Zelda's appeal is nostalgic. Mm-hmm. Maybe even more so than something like Mario is, because I've had, like, you know, known kids and neighbors who've, like, I've seen them grow up and, like, obviously didn't know Mario and then just love it.
Yeah.
Zelda, I think, is definitely one of those games that kind of is based on nostalgia. And Lewis, big gamer, hasn't really ever played Zelda, and you didn't get on with it.
No, yeah. I'm not saying it's not a technically impressive game. You know, the fact that you can swing a sword and cut blades of grass, or you can chop down trees, you know, it's a very interactive world. It's very smart. Like, if you have your torch by your side and you're near long grass, it will catch fire, and then that will spread. You know, it's very smart like that. But in terms of the actual game itself, I just wasn't overwhelmed. I mean, it might be because I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn on the PS4 recently, and I am absolutely in love with that game.
So that's done an open world correctly, in your opinion, better than No Man's Sky?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No Man's Sky is just out. I haven't played that game in about a year. No Man's Sky was dead. Horizon Zero Dawn, I really liked because it's something different to what's been offered before, kind of with the mechanical dinosaur kind of thing and stripping down of the dinosaurs, not just shooting and killing things and stuff like that. It's a more tactical way of playing open world games. Whereas Zelda, you know, I think it was the story that I just couldn't get into more than anything. And the fact that it wasn't all voice acted. You know, there's a lot of just on-screen text that you have to read. I'm really engaged with, like, proper voice acting and stuff like that.
That's pretty standard Zelda, isn't it? Link never actually says anything.
There is a bit of voice acting in this one, but it's just for the cutscenes, and Link is still silent, in fact.
Yeah, right.
So they've sort of gone a little bit that way, but it's a very hesitant step.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever played any Zelda games, Tamlin?
Yeah, I had Wind Waker and the one, the original Game Boy, and that's about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But, even with that, I've got no particular nostalgia for Zelda. So
really, yeah.
I'm not, like, super excited about it.
Yeah, same here. I never had a N64, so I had Wind Waker on my GameCube, and I've played a few of the DS titles and a couple of the Game Boy ones as well.
Yeah.
And it's something I can kind of pick up and you can kind of just plow through. Mm. But I haven't yet played Breath of the Wild. I would like to. Mm. But to take it back to the hardware and some of the things that people have been talking about this week. First of all, people have been saying it's too expensive, but is it too expensive? Because people are comparing that to PS4 and Xbox One, which have been out for over 3 years.
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag in that respect. So the price tag for the main console is $280, which I think is fair. For the launch price of a console, that's very reasonable. It seems expensive if you compare it to, say, the base model PlayStation 4 or Xbox One at the moment, which you could get for less than that with a game thrown in. But of course, those are 3-4-year-old consoles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and the Switch still comes in cheaper than the PS4 Pro, and it comes in cheaper than we're expecting the Xbox Scorpio to be later this year. So if you compare it to sort of new hardware, it seems pretty reasonably priced. The problem comes in all the other stuff you have to buy. So there's a Pro controller, which is more like a traditional gamepad.
The one that's used in all the marketing.
No, it's not. They haven't marketed it much. No? You're thinking of the Joy-Con Grip, which does come with the console. That lets you slot the two mini controllers into a little grip that makes it a bit more like a normal controller.
It's not very comfortable, though, is
but
it?
But yeah, it's a bit small. It's not totally comfortable. The Pro controller is bigger, more comfortable, more and just feels more comfortable if you want to play a big game like Zelda for hours and hours and hours. It's not a necessary purchase, but I've really enjoyed using it, and it's definitely my preferred way to play. But it's £65.
Okay.
Which, compared to, say, a new PS4 controller, which you can normally get £40-45. So it feels like that's very steep. If you want to get another pair of the Joy-Con controllers, which are the ones that come bundled in, it's £75 for a pair of them.
Yeah.
And again, these are all optional things, but there'll be some games where, you know, there's a game called ARMS, a boxing game coming out in spring. You will need, if you want to do local multiplayer, you'll need a second pair of Joy-Con, and that's £75 that you're going to have to spend.
So have you... That's a lot.
Yeah, that
is a lot. Have you experienced any of the problems that people were reporting, for instance, the screen being scratched when taken in and out of the dock?
I haven't noticed that. So there's been a mix of sort of problems reported, some small, some more serious. There's been the usual sort of stuff you get with any device like this. Some people saying they've had dead pixels. Some people have just had totally bricked units. But any big hardware launch, there'll be a small number that get that.
Yep.
A fair few people said they've had scratches to the device when they put it in and out of the dock, which is how it connects to the TV. I think what people are actually saying is, I haven't seen anyone saying the main screen is getting scratched, but it's the bezel around the screen.
All right.
Which still isn't great, though. But that's, I haven't had that myself, but I can see from the dock design, there's nothing sort of padded to it at all or anything, and if you just put it in, you know, part of the joy of the console is you can very quickly take it out and put it back into the dock and go straight on. You don't want to be having to be very fiddly and precise as you slot it in. So I can see that if some people are getting scratches, that suggests the dock maybe needs a slight tweak and you could see a redesign down the line.
And did you also have trouble connectivity-wise on one of the controllers?
Yeah, so this is the bigger problem. This is more widespread. I made a point of mentioning this in my review of the console because I've had problems with it. I've had very bad problems, actually. So what happens is, the left Joy-Con controller, when it's connected to the console via Bluetooth, when using it wirelessly, sometimes it just drops its connection. And it'll just be for a few seconds at a time, then it reconnects by itself. But it happens too much for my liking. Yeah. I gave up on trying to play Zelda with it. That's why I said I've been using the Pro controller, because I was losing connection too much and I was getting really frustrated. I hoped it was going to be a firmware problem. There was going to be a big sort of launch day patch. But that didn't include any sort of software fix for the problem. And now people have broken down the controllers, take them apart, and it looks like it might actually be a bit of poor hardware design that's to blame, which is
bad.
Very bad. So the issue is that the antenna in the right controller, which is the one that's working fine, is bigger and positioned in a different place to the one in the left controller. The left controller, just they have slightly different tech inside them. They each have some slightly different sensors. And it looks like Nintendo compromised on the antenna placement and size in the left one, and it's not good.
Have there been any other instances in gaming of hardware malfunction like that at launch that's compromised the success of something?
I mean, there were things like, I think it was the Xbox 360 for years was plagued by what's called the Red Ring of Death, which is
subtle.
It's about as good as it sounds. It was just a lot of consoles that just ran the power button and died. Yeah. And
that happened to me.
Did he? Yeah.
So Microsoft ended up having to replace a lot of consoles for that.
I seem to remember something about the Wii U strap. Not the Wii U, the Wii, individual Wii straps for the controllers were a bit...
The Wii wrist straps, the original straps that came with the Wiimotes were a bit too thin, so they broke sometimes and controllers flying into people's tellies.
Yeah.
So Nintendo sent everyone replacement straps that were a bit thicker. But I mean, that's a little bit of fabric. That's pennies per unit. If they're going to have to replace everyone's left Joy-Con controller, which they're selling for £40 on its own, if they're having to send one of those out to everyone with a Switch, that could be very expensive.
I mean, I think the fact that they've issued guidelines to help negate the effect means that they're not going to be replacing them anytime soon. They just think people are going to have to deal with it. Yeah. But then some of their recommendations are absolutely ridiculous. They say to keep them at least 4 foot away from any other Wi-Fi enabled device.
Which is useless. I mean, I have it sitting next to my TV, like everyone will, and my TV is a Wi-Fi device.
Yeah, you've got your router and your phone.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You can't get away from it.
So, in my notes, I've used the word mercilessly. Maybe that's maybe they're not mercilessly picked on, but why is it that Nintendo gets so much flack for usually its new hardware? Because you have something like the Wii that was a runaway success. It sold ridiculously well. And then the DS, the original one at least, practically sold as much as any Game Boy has ever sold. But then obviously it is kind of intermittently, it does do something like the Wii U, which is probably a mistake hardware-wise, and the 3DS hasn't sold as well. Why can't Nintendo get it right first time? Is it just because it's trying to do something different?
Yeah,
I mean, they're always trying something adventurous. You could never fault them for that. The Switch is doing something no one else is trying to do. And, I mean, that's partly the whole portable hybrid thing, but actually that's the bit that's working fine. But the Joy-Con controllers have a lot of cool new tech in them that no other controller out on the market has, like HD Rumble, IR motion cameras. Like, there's a lot of stuff in there that they haven't really shown off to its full potential yet. And so it's not surprising, and in a tiny, tiny form factor. So it's not really that surprising something's gone wrong.
But maybe the future looks good for it, though, I think, because fix that controller problem, get a ton more games.
Oh, that's, I think that's the biggest issue for me at the moment. As someone that has a PS4, you know,
yeah,
it might be 3 or 4 years old, but, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of games available for it, whereas on the Switch, it's fairly limited at the moment, and I think they're all pretty expensive because it's all new.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's just the tough position of, because Nintendo have broken out of the traditional release cycle. It used to be every manufacturer would release their new console within the same 12-month period, so they'd all be on a level footing of launch, very few games, not much to do in it, but all build up together. Nintendo's broken out of that, so now they're coming in right in the middle of the PS4 Xbox One cycle. Yep. So they're not competing with other launch devices.
Yeah.
They're competing with consoles with tens of millions of users and years worth of games built up.
To me, it seems like if you like flagship Nintendo games like Mario or Zelda or whatever, then you'll probably get one.
Yep.
If you don't, you won't. And it's like
pretty clear cut, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think Nintendo hardware release.
In terms of the launch, in terms of the first year, yeah, that definitely looks the case. The big question for Nintendo is basically whether they can get some big multi-platform games that make the most of the portable setup. If they can get some of the big titles and say, and you can play this at home or on the go, that could be a draw for a lot of people, because that's something they can't do with their PS4 or Xbox.
And just quickly, when is it Odyssey coming out?
Mario Odyssey is currently holiday 2017.
Oh, that's so vague.
Yeah.
Okay, well, vaguely, we're excited about that, and hopefully the price might come down, and we're not going to write it off just yet.
No, I'm a big fan. I'm a really big fan of the Switch.
So on that note, start switching or keep bitching?
Start switching.
What are you, Tamlin?
Start switching.
Yeah, excellent. Mm-hmm. Lewis?
Keep bitching.
Yes, right. I haven't written an outro, but that was the 55th episode of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone, and see you next week.
UK Tech Weekly podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.